Shalom. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program for the Genesis 123 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com or genesis123.co and follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where we're also going to share an exciting opportunity, and please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. So today, and if you're watching the video, you can already see a different background. This is a first. This is going to be a musical Inspiration from Zion. And I'm so excited because 2 weeks ago, we celebrated my youngest daughter's wedding. It was wild. It was joyous. It was unbelievable. I can't believe I had the stamina to dance all night as I did. And it was really just a tremendous blessing for all of us, our family, and for everyone who got to celebrate with us. But in addition to celebrating with us live in the mountains of Jerusalem, we also had thousands of people following from all over the world, specifically Christian friends who engage with Genesis 123 Foundation. And the comments, and I want to give a special shout out to my friend Eliyahu Berkowitz, who was live there weeping as he was giving commentary to all the people following about what was going on. But what was so remarkable to me, is so remarkable, is the joy and the uniqueness of a Jewish wedding here in Israel especially, was felt even though probably 95% or more of the songs and of the ceremony were all in Hebrew. So many people didn't know what's going on. So today I'm so privileged and grateful, truly grateful, that we have Rabbi Shlomo Katz, who is the spiritual leader at the Shirat David Synagogue and Community here in Efrat. He's been the spiritual leader since 2016, leading the community with his Torah classes and religious guidance and providing remarkable pastoral care. I know this firsthand. He's an unbelievable, the Yiddish word is mensch, just somebody you want to be around, and tremendous counseling when needed. Rabbi Katz received his rabbinic ordination from Rabbi Chaim Bravender and Rabbi Shlomo Riskin at the Joseph and Gwendolyn Strauss Rabbinic Cemetery. He's known here with respect and affection as Rav Shlomo, whose leadership extends beyond the physical community that he's built across Israel and indeed around the world. Rav Shlomo is also an accomplished musician, and that's one of the reasons I asked him if he would help narrate for you today what's going on with what we call the Jewish playlist at my daughter's wedding. He released multiple albums and conducted concerts, I don't even know how many, hundreds, if not thousands, all over the world. His passion for music has become part of the very identity of the Shirat David community here in Efrat, shaping the prayers and other special occasions. Rav Shlomo lives here in Efrat. He's a neighbor just down the road with his wife, Bina, five daughters, and as of a few months ago, they welcomed their new baby son, the first boy. Rav Shlomo, my heart's racing at the fact that you're here with us today, that we're getting to have this conversation, because I get to introduce you to a whole new community that doesn't know you yet, but also that you're going to give so much dimension to this tremendous simcha, the simcha, I'm using the Hebrew word, the joy, the celebration that we just had 2 weeks ago. Thank you, and welcome to Inspiration from Zion.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's a pleasure and joy to be here with you and with all your wonderful friends that are with us as well.
Thank you so much. You know, before, I wanted to get a little bit of background, also about you, but where we are now in how we're celebrating these tremendous milestones. Before we actually get into the music, because if we were having this conversation 2 years ago, it'd be a very different conversation. But first, about you. You're American originally, yeah? Tell us when and where and how your family ended up coming to Israel.
I made Aliyah twice. One first time was with my family at the age of 9 from Los Angeles to a town called Ra'anana, where we lived for about 8 years. Family moved back to Los Angeles in 1997. And at the age of 22, in 2002, I felt that it was time to come back home, even if my parents were still in the States, and learn to become a rabbi. And that's how I found and fell in love with the region where you and I are blessed to be living in. So I've been back now for 23 years, thank God, here in Israel.
Let's take a little bit of a deeper dive. 2002, what motivated you then? Why then?
It's a very good question. At that point, I was living in Los Angeles. I had begun to teach and to perform, to do a lot of music, a lot of traveling, publishing albums for all different crowds, but obviously all Jewish content. But I also I became an assistant chaplain at that time during those years at a young age of 20 at Cedars Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, under the guidance and tutelage of Rabbi Dr. Levi Meir of blessed memory. He was the chief chaplain there, and he took me in. He felt I had a knack for talking to people's hearts. And
he was right.
I sensed from a young age that I have to step up. I have to take things, even though things were happening very organically, I need to come back to the Holy Land, and I want to learn and invest these precious years in becoming an actual rabbi and not just someone that could keep on doing great things, but without that weight behind me. And that's why, thank God, that was the time and that was the decision. And I instantly fell in love with this piece of land. It's for those that haven't been here yet, it's hard to describe, but as you said so beautifully in your introduction, the original, I think you said the belt, the
original Bible Belt.
You really, really feel that and breathe that and live that when you're here. And I fell madly in love with the region. I thought I was going to learn to be a rabbi and then move back to Los Angeles and have a community. I could not leave. And things were developing here, both musically and in terms of teaching. And that's the short version of just listening to my heart and following and trusting it.
Well, a segue, and it's hard to speak because it's bringing tears to my eyes, but it's very relevant to where I just wanted to go. When you came here in 2002, we were in the heat of a very bad situation. It was then dubbed the Second Intifada, but buses and cafes and malls and hotels getting blown up, and I forget all the names of the operations. It was a very scary time to be here, and we're a bit beyond it. Perhaps a year ago, we would be in a more, I would use the word scary more aptly, but we're in a very tense time still. That took a lot of fortitude, a lot of for sure knowing what you wanted and wanting to be here, even though you thought that maybe you would be going back at the time. But maybe that kind of leads to the question I wanted to go. You know, we're now 20 months and 2 days as of this conversation since the Hamas attack and massacre and the war in which we're engaged. And I found it really hard. You and I'm sure you've spoken about it. I found it very hard to balance the reality that we're at war, that our young men and young women are in battle in multiple fronts, dying. We're still a country in trauma. We're not in post-trauma. We're in present trauma. And yet, babies are born. You have a new baby. And weddings happen. And bar and bat mitzvahs. And so many other celebrations. And we can go out to a restaurant to celebrate a birthday as if nothing happened. How do you balance that?
I don't think it's conscious. I think this is where we have kind of developed this ability to tune into our subconscious and operating from there, because consciously consciously, how could we smile? How could we celebrate? How could we be filled with bliss? And not only celebrating, the level of celebration is immensely deeper than whatever was, like you said before, 20 months and 2 days ago.
You feel that?
Tremendously. The pain is more raw. The bliss is more blissful. And how does that work? So humanly speaking, that's called psychosis. That's pretty, that's with sugar. That's crazy. But it's not, because we're operating from our soul. And in the Kabbalistic works and the more esoteric, mystical school of thought, our sages teach us that the soul that's truly alive, on one side of the soul, of the heart, there's a smile, and on the other side, there's a tear. And humanly speaking, they contradict, but really, in truth, they complement each other, and they take each other to the next level that they need to get to. And that's why I feel that, due to the pain, which is so real, that's only elevating our simchas that much more, infinitely higher and deeper.
Wow. It's interesting. I didn't know that what you just said, but I wrote an article, I feel like it was 6 or 7 months ago, called Tears of Joy Out of One Eye and Tears of Grief Out of the Other. And that is our existence. I still find it hard not to be in the midst of a celebration, whether it's a wedding or my daughter's birthday party, 30th birthday party a week ago, you know, just...
So I want to clarify something.
Okay.
Hard doesn't mean that it's wrong.
Hard. Good.
You know what I mean? Hard. It's true. It's hard. But that doesn't, God forbid, lessen from the ability to be tapped into an inner world of joy. Maybe that's what it is. It's a more inner world of bliss where we see we're still getting married. We're still setting up shop. We're still having Jewish children being born, because we are tuned into eternity, into Netzach. And I think that's maybe where the joy is coming from. It's less outward, okay, and it's more inward.
Okay, beautiful. Let's start talking about weddings. You've done a few. I think the last time I saw you was at a wedding, which was interrupted by a Houthi missile in the center of Israel, the Latinx. Right? Not the first time that's happened. And actually, what's really funny, during I wish that my Christian friends watching our ceremony 2 weeks ago understood what was happening under the chuppah, under the wedding canopy. My son said, you know, everyone in Hebrew announcing, turn your phones off and this. And then he said in Hebrew, and to the Yemenites among us, because my son-in-law is 100% Yemenite, a Jewish Yemenite, he said, we hope that your cousins don't disrupt our ceremony. But that was, you know, that's ever present in our lives. You've done a lot of weddings. What's changed? I mean, maybe you've answered that, but in the last 20 months.
Yeah, I've been blessed to officiate many, many weddings in the last 20 months. If I had to think about what's changed, well, what's evolved, I'd probably say that anything exterior, it really relates to what I said before, anything exterior about weddings becomes less meaningful. And the focus is more on the fact that there's a bride and groom that are here right now that are choosing life. And that's always true with every wedding, but that's been highlighted and spotlighted. It's on the spotlight now. And I think that gives people so much hope and strength to keep on going on strong. So I think that the weddings that we're going to today, it's not only that the bride and groom are such sources of, that they themselves are so joyful. When you participate at a Jewish wedding today, you receive strength. You receive stamina. And you regain focus on what life is all about, probably more than what it was before October 7th, 2023.
Yeah. The other piece, and I'll just say this, and then I want to jump in, is I don't know if, I think probably we're seeing more men arriving in uniforms with automatic weapons over their shoulders. And that's a tremendous blessing, because it means they've just come from wherever they're called up. or serving. And it also, and the parallel of that is that we know when there's a 26-year-old man getting married, that any number of his friends are on active duty and are not there with us.
Oh yeah. Very, very visible. That's felt very much in the air.
Yeah. Let's jump in. For those watching the video, you see that I have it queued up. Hopefully the audio will work too. I can't not keep going through this video, and I want we'll share the link so people can watch the video. And now with Rav Shlomo's narration, they'll understand more the sense of the music. But I'd love to just start and then kind of roll through, not at specific segments, but there are different songs and different themes. And I'd love for you to. So I'm gonna stop talking for a minute and just listen for 30 seconds or so.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps, to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and our models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
So we're watching me dancing my son-in-law-to-be. And what's the song? Hold on, let's listen. We heard the mixing of two songs there. What was going on? You smiled too.
I love this song very much. I'm very connected to the author, the composer of this song, so I know exactly when it was written and in what.
Oh, good. Tell us.
Yeah, this was written by Rabbi Shlomo Karbach in April of 1989.
No kidding.
Yeah. And this is a song from the liturgy of the one of the blessings that we say underneath the canopy. It's the seventh blessing. There's seven blessings we conclude the chuppah ceremony with, and these are also the seven blessings that are said for six nights
right
before the wedding. Right. So the words here, Mehera Hashem Elokeinu, may it be soon, please God, that Yishama Be'arei Yehuda, that in the cities of Judah and the outskirts of Jerusalem, it will be heard. Now, this is all based on prophecy that the prophets prophesied while we were sent out into exile, and we thought that there will never be sounds of bliss or of joy in the Holy Land. The prophet said, no. Od yishama be'arei Yehuda. One day, maybe not now, it will be heard again. There'll be sounds of Jewish joy, of a bride coming together, the sounds and the voices of a bride and a groom coming together, celebrating their choice of life. So when we sing this song, we're singing the fulfillment of prophecy, and it's happening in front of our eyes.
So I learned something there. I mean, we know this. First of all, I didn't know that Rav Shlomo Karlbach wrote this in 1989, which tells me that weddings before 1989 must not have had as much simcha, as much spirit joy. I don't know, because this is just such a staple of our weddings today. But the other thing that's remarkable, this was at the Psagot Winery. I know you've been there any number of times. And under the chuppah, under the wedding canopy, my son-in-law's rabbi spoke how that not only are we generally fulfilling that prophecy right there, but that this is where Jeremiah spoke it, right in these mountains. That's powerful.
That's, if that's not going to bring out joy, I don't know what will.
Indeed.
That's exactly what's going on in this clip. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's. I want to watch for a little bit more because it's really powerful. And then we go to the. I think it flows to the next song. I love this part because now we're dancing my son-in-law in to see my daughter for the first time as they're about to marry. Okay, so I just have fast forwarded. Let's listen for a moment. And then Rav Shlomo, if you will, whoops, I rewinded. And then you can help us. Here we go.
Nuach v'dudai
The most listening and not seeing the audio, although you'll do that, and now seeing the man about to become my son-in-law approach my daughter for the first time. He can't talk, I'm getting emotional. Shlomo, what's that about?
This is such a beautiful song. This melody was written by someone who is actually connected to our community here.
No, come on.
Yeah. You know Sarah Landau, David and Sarah Landau?
Yeah.
So their son, Binny Landau, is a very, very, he's become a very famous musician here in Israel. This is his song. And the words are absolutely gorgeous. The words that were sung over here speak about the bride and groom, by choosing to get married, they are building a sanctuary in each other's hearts so that we don't have to keep on looking for refuge outside, but we'll find refuge from within. That's what this song is all about. Mishkan evnelach belibi. I will build a sanctuary for you in my heart. Leman, the words are leman, tuchli lanuach minedudaich, so that you could rest from all of your wandering all over the world, so that you can gather your strength again. Because I feel your pain, I feel your need to feel calm, and I'm dedicating my life to doing just that.
I'm done. You've I didn't know that. Wow. Unreal. Thank you for that. So this is powerful. This is also, I want to fast forward because I just to hear your explanation of what's about to happen with him putting the veil. Let's just watch for those watching.
את מקומי לאוי אוח הקיצפי ביחר יוני נזל התקווה אל תעתי תסכי את קולך ובקשי והמלשי
Hey, standing up, bring the veil over her face. They just had this really powerful, intimate moment, just the two of them. No one could hear them, no idea what they said to one another. And then he puts a veil over her face.
Right.
What's that about?
So there are many different explanations as to this epic moment that happens at every single wedding. This is, normally it's attributed to Jacob and Rachel and Leah, where there was a whole mess up. There was a whole story about when they had, when he was going to marry Rachel, but then Laban then tricked and picked Leah, the other daughter, instead of Rachel. When we cover our bride at that moment, we're basically designating and saying, I'm certain this is the one that I want to marry. This is the one that I'm choosing. There's a halachic context here. That means a Jewish law context here about designation, which is very much part of the ceremony. On a deeper level, in the deeper context, what's going on over here is that the bride and groom at this moment are saying, we're going into our world, into our life. And even though there are a lot of people here, we're hiding behind the veil because we have to have a lot of secrets with each other. And therefore, the bride is the one, she's the master of the real secrets, so she's covering herself. The canopy, beneath the canopy, is also some type of a veil where we're letting the world know what you see. Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful, but it's so much deeper than what you could ever think and you could ever imagine. And that's what's taking place at this moment.
And then we go right from there. Now, leading into that, I and my son-in-law's father dance him in, and my wife and his mother are sitting there next to my daughter, right? And then as soon as that happens, the music gets wild again and people dance him out, and his parents escort him to the chuppah, to the canopy. And we're going to watch that in a moment because the music is also very unique that I want to go. It's not something we get to hear or see much of the time. And then it's my turn, me and my wife. I'll note now so I don't forget, a number of Christian friends who saw the wedding were amazed at how less formal it is, in the sense that everyone's not seated and the man's not standing at the front, and the bride walks in with the father, and then the father is seated. This is a family affair.
Right.
So here, I want to listen to this. You don't even know what's coming. You know the music. My son-in-law's family, his grandparents, all came from Yemen. Some before the state, some after. And so now we're listening to what's, I don't know the name of the music, but the music that danced to what's called the Yemenite step. And here we actually see them as they literally are approaching. And I have to say, I love this. It's so special to me because as we've come close to their family, I said to my daughter the Shabbat after the wedding, I said, wow, what a privilege you have that you're going to raise your children. They might be white as she is, but with a Yemenite tradition.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. What can you expand on that?
Absolutely. Especially since in our shul, in Shirat David, our synagogue here, we have on the bottom is a Yemenite shul. So their tradition is very, very rich. The traditions of the Northern African Jewish communities are much more dated. They come from way before our, you know, I assume, Jonathan, you're Russian, Polish, something like that.
Yeah, like
me. The tradition here, even the way that you dance, like,
Russian Polish in my diaspora, but now I'm an Israeli.
Now you're an Israeli, but in your diaspora, right? Likewise.
Yeah.
So, the song that he was dancing to was also speaking about how much happiness it gives the Lord in heaven when he sees people acting in a godly manner. Because the way to act in a godly manner is to be creative, just like God created. And when you create, when you're building a home, you're creating something.
Amazing.
That's what was going on over there.
Okay, now it's my turn. Now we're walking. Lori, who you know, my wife and I are walking in Avital. And let's listen to what music she chose. Getting teary now, looking at myself getting teary in the video. I can't listen to this enough. When you think about the words, to me this is the epiphany. This is it.
Yeah. This is what it's all about. This is what's called the Birkat Kala. This is an actual blessing that the brides say when they're still sitting on their chair where the veil was. But it's also become a song that brides have now walked towards the chuppah with, that speak about gratitude, expressing the deepest form of gratitude.
But it's the words Ribono Shel Olam, to our creator, right? I don't know about non-Jewish weddings. I don't know. Do they sing? Is it just popular music? Or are they singing? Are they worshiping? This is our worship.
This is absolute worship. Every stage of the process. Yeah, I wouldn't know. I haven't been to too many non-Jewish weddings, but by us, it's the consciousness of gratitude to God plays a massive role.
And yeah, I'll keep crying, so I'm going to stop.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
But now you alluded in the first song, which you shared, and what amazing thing that I know that now, that this was that it was written by Rav Shlomo Karlbach. Now we're going to listen. People can follow the whole thing, but we're going to listen to the seventh bracha, the seventh blessing of the seven under the chuppah, the wedding canopy, which is a pivotal part of the ceremony. And you'll figure it out right away. I have to get to the right point. That's the sixth. Here we go. And my son-in-law's grandfather, I missed it, was called up with the honor. We call up different people to have the honor of saying the blessings. This is his uncle.
Thank
you, dear. Yeah. Now, 95% of the time, weddings that you and I go to don't hear that tune, because that was by my son-in-law's Yemenite grandfather, who's celebrating the marriage of his first grandson.
Oh, Oh, beautiful.
Using the unique, really unique Yemenite accented Hebrew.
Correct. But the words are the words we can make out.
The words we make out, which is the song again from the beginning. Do you want to?
Correct. The words speak about blessed Asher Bara Sason V'Simcha. God created joy and bliss. He created a bride and groom. And then all different forms of happiness, gila, rina, ditza, v'chedva, love, camaraderie, oneness, and friendship, re'ut. And after we describe all the attributes that God created in the world, we're blessing the bride and groom that those should play functioning roles in their home that they're building. And then we go back to what we said in the beginning, please God, soon in our day, the prophecy will come true as it's coming true. And we will hear all these sounds of joy and bliss booming off of the mountains of Judea and of Samaria and of Sagot Winery, where they're located.
So because people just heard a Yemenite tune, and it's funny, my daughter, I don't think I'm speaking out of school, really wanted it to be more of a traditional Ashkenazi singing. But I think this is beautiful. She missed that. We missed that. And people who are listening don't know what our more traditional is. Can I impose upon you to sing a little bit of what the seventh bracha would sound like if you were the one singing it?
You know what? One second.
Uh-oh. Instrumental.
You better believe it.
I just hope that the guitar doesn't diminish from the audio.
I put on a switch that usually does work for guitars right now.
Okay, good.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
So one of the ways we sing it is we do bang.
We've never had a live concert before, an inspiration from Zion.
Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu. So the way we usually sing it is Asher bara sason v'simcha chatan v'kala, Asher bara sason v'simcha chatan v'kala, gila rina ditza v'cheva ava v'achva v'shalom v'reut. That's one way. Or another melody of Rabbi Shlomo Krabach goes like this. Asher bara sason v'simcha, sason v'simcha, chatan v'kala, gila rina ditza, ditza v'chedva, ahava, ahava v'yachva, v'shalom, v'shalom v'reut.
Amazing. Thank you. I made some points to what I wanted to cue up to for some other parts of it. And one of the next place, and you know where we are in the ceremony, is also something that's new from my question that I asked you at the before. What's different in the last 20 months?
Yeah.
We're going to listen, and I'd like for you to just talk about it after for the prayer for the soldiers. And still the 55 hostages.
Israel, never.
It's hard for me to speak now.
Yeah, now you got me too. Yeah.
We didn't always do it. We certainly didn't do prayers for hostages 20 months ago. There might have been a prayer for the state and for the soldiers. I saw myself in the video choked up trying to sing, which is also, by the way, something that's beautiful. It's participatory. It's not a worship leader singing a chazan or a cantor singing the prayer and people saying amen, but in fact we're all participating. And then when we pivoted to the prayer for the hostages, you see people embracing.
Yeah. These are moments when the heart is wide open. When the heart's wide open, you have to pray for that which means the most to you. And obviously, in the situation that we're in these times when the heart is wide open, how it's almost a given. It's a given. It's not even though it's not mandatory. You don't need to do this at a wedding, but it's a given that you're going to go there. And these are the prayers that we say for the welfare of our soldiers, the success in their missions, and for the returning of our hostages coming home, and that we're all Acheinu Beit Yisrael. We're all brothers and sisters praying for the same thing. And when they're sung today at weddings, I feel that it's the peak of, for me, it's the peak of every chuppah.
Why? Okay, that's a powerful statement. Why?
Because it brings it down to what we're fighting for. It brings recognition of and gratitude towards those that are fighting. While we're getting married, we're able to get married because right now there are thousands of the most holiest brothers and sisters of ours that are on the front lines enabling us to be besimcha, to be in joy. So that moment of recognition, of gratitude, to me, stands out more than any other time.
Yeah, I agree. And then we pivot now. I'm fast forwarding just a couple of seconds because I don't know if it's all the same structure in all. It's probably not, right, in all ceremonies. But what logically comes next is something that we've been doing now for thousands of years, which is singing from Psalms, If I Forget You. But let's come, which, and that was normal. And this, well, I'm going to let you narrate that, but let's listen. That we've done, but that's you talk. You got better words than I.
You know what? That's something we've been saying for forever, for every chuppah I've ever been to. However, definitely since October 7th, when that part comes, it's really interesting how there's such a new energy that comes with words that you've been saying for so many years. These are words from King David that are speaking about the role of Jerusalem in our hearts, that if we forget Jerusalem, what is life even worth? What's it worth fighting for? And I think, and this is, God forbid, not meant to sound political, but I believe that one of the things that's emerging from this time in life that we're in is a question of identity, that we're restoring our identity in a very profound way. It may not be strictly a religious identity or strictly a national identity. It's almost beyond religion and nationalism. it's the root soul of who we are. And that's what's happening at these weddings, is that there's a restoration of identity, that we are in this because we are fighting for our home, which is Jerusalem.
And it's and so- that on our and our happiest day, we're still remembering
correct
the destruction. And then what people didn't see on the video, or people who are watching the video but didn't see in the audio, is dressed after my son-in-law says that from Psalms. He steps on a glass. People are used to that, as if they're in modern culture, if you see a Jewish wedding, you see the groom, the chatan, step on a glass. And I don't like it so much when people clap after that, because that doesn't really affect anything. I love your thoughts. But what else about that dynamic, that we're 77 years into the state, I can come pick you up in 4 minutes, and we can be in Jerusalem in 24 minutes if there's no traffic. Why are we still saying, if I forget you, go Jerusalem, let my tongue cleave to the roof of its mouth?
I'm going to be very daring and go with the sports analogy, if that's okay.
Okay.
I'm from Los Angeles. I grew up with the Lakers and the Dodgers. I had a lot of sports pride growing up. You know, we were winning. We won a lot. So there is a famous clip from the Lakers playoffs in 2000 and I don't know what year it was, maybe 9 or 8. You have to win 4 games in the last series of a basketball tournament. That's the finals. The Lakers were up 2-0, which means they're doing pretty good on their way to a championship. And the reporter asked Kobe Bryant, the famous Laker great who was tragically killed in a helicopter crash a few years ago with his daughter. He looked very serious. And the reporter said, Kobe, why aren't you smiling? He said, why should I smile? He said, you're up 2-0. And then he looks at the guy with just a stern face. He says, job's not over. Is the job over? Job's not over.
Excellent.
I feel that over here too. It's like we're still, because we're on our way to fully being back here. And that'll culminate with the rebuilding of the Holy Temple and the ingathering of exiles and peace in the world. And until that happens, that element of pain and of seriousness has got to still be there.
Will we still sing it at our weddings?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Okay. We can ponder that.
What do you think?
I hope not. You know my daughter-in-law's father well, Shlomo Lazar, and he and we spoke about this at the wedding 2 weeks ago, that his perspective is we shouldn't be singing Odishama, right? We shouldn't be singing that because we're here, we're there. We should be showing gratitude for, and my answer to him, and I love him, is that yeah, but it's not complete. But you just said it right. We're not there. We're back now. We are dancing. Jerusalem is ours, but it's not complete yet. But I don't know. I don't know if when we finish this recording, and God miraculously lets us rebuild the temple. I don't know what are they going to do at weddings next week.
I don't know. Let's be around.
Let's pray for it.
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better. Much worse. It's going to be a long war because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 123 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire, and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds, just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones.
We now finished the ceremony. My son-in-law, who's a lot of fun, now he's officially my son-in-law because he said those pivotal words under the canopy to my daughter. The music that they danced out to was from Greece, which was my childhood with Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta. But now they had some private time. People ate their first course, and now they've come back for us to celebrate and start dancing. And I just want to go through a couple of the songs that we're dancing to that are a little bit different. Interesting, when the video pivots, you don't hear the music, but now everyone's singing, and you can see where me, the man on this side, are dancing like crazy. There I am. What's that song about?
That song is a statement from the Talmud, a dispute between the house of Hillel and Shammai, Ketzad Meragdim Lifnei Hakala, which means, what's the proper way to speak about a bride and a groom? So the house of Hillel said, Kala Na'ava Chasuda, that she's a pleasant, and Chasuda means that she's like righteous. Like that's really what you should be speaking about when praising a bride.
Okay. All right. And then the music, I don't know how many songs I've missed. By the way, this dancing and this level of music is going on for, I don't know, the better part of an hour, maybe more.
Sure.
Whoops. Let me. Now, I made a note of what the music is, but I was expecting the words. So you know what the words are.
I know the words. Yeah. So the words are the blessing that we say over something new. Shehechiyanu v'kiyemanu v'higiyanu lazman hazeh. When we celebrate something for the first time in the year, when we eat something for the first time in its season, we acknowledge newness. We acknowledge innovation. We acknowledge something new. And that's what we're blessing on. There's a new couple in the world. So we're saying Shehechiyanu v'kiyemanu.
Right. And if you watch the whole video, people go back and watch it, then they'll see also my son-in-law saying that blessing under the chuppah when he puts on his talit for the first time.
Sure.
This is also what blows me away. We take it for granted. It's a prayer. It's not just lyrics to a song. It's a prayer. It's something that we say in our prayers at our Shabbat, not Shabbat table specifically, but when we're celebrating holidays, it's something that's so ingrained with us and how we worship the Creator.
That's right.
What So I want to stop that and let you talk, but then come back to it because something fun's about to happen. So the beginning of that clip when I started playing was something that you've already narrated, that it's coming from those seventh blessing that we heard my son-in-law's grandfather say under the chuppah, and from what's his name? Binny Landau's. Yeah. Wow, which blows me away that I know that now. And then it moves to another song, Bo'i Kala. We're singing about the bride again. What's that about?
The liturgy comes from the Friday night prayer service where we refer to the Shabbos queen as a bride and we invite her into our midst. Bo'i Kala, Bo'i Kala. The melody that's, if you thought I blew your socks off until now with anything I said, it's nothing in comparison to what I'm going to tell you right now. This song was written by a woman who's a very famous Israeli singer named Achinoam Nini.
I didn't know that. Wow.
But this
also woman, Yemenite.
Yemenite as well. When she was a young girl, her family lived in America for many years. Her father was studying there or working there. And she happened to attend a Jewish religious day school called SAR, where my father was the music teacher. And my father discovered her when she was about 7 years old.
No way.
Was blown away by her and her Yemenite culture and her pitch. And he brought her into the studio at a young age to launch off her musical career. And she was invited to my parents' wedding, where my father wrote a song for my mother called Bo'i B'Shalom Bo'i Kala. She remembered that and eventually did her spin of it. And now we're at your daughter's wedding 45 years later.
I had no idea going into this conversation that you were going to make this as personal as you have. But that's the maybe there's more. So I'm not going to say that's the cherry on top yet.
No,
but
I don't know,
wow,
if you can get more than that. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. OK, I just want to play a little bit more because it gets more fun. Yeah, this dancing is going to become a little bit less separate, men and women together. But it's also kind of, when we hear this song at the wedding, we also know that we're about to go into celebrating with the bride and the groom together. We're not going to show you all the craziness that happens. One of them, I don't know, were you at any of the Lazar weddings? We've now adopted some of their traditions that go back to Shlomo and Zahavit's wedding, which I love that we've infused here. But also, maybe just speak for a minute if you don't mind. And then I got, I think, three more songs with your okay. Are dancing separate? The men and the women are dancing entirely separately until now.
Until now, yeah. And at this point, there's a mitzvah. It's really a mitzvah that the bride...
A mitzvah, an obligation.
An obligation and a privilege to actually make the kala happy and rejoice in front of her. So you really, initially, it really was just about rejoicing before the kala for the bride. But then it became more that people felt, let's just have them both enjoy what we're going to do for them. And that's what ends up happening at this point.
Amazing. Okay, now I got 1, 2, 3 more. Let's see what you've got. Maybe we'll find another cherry on top. I don't. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. I stepped in the wrong place. You get to see my daughter dancing with my cousin. That's very nice. You know what?
This is a good place.
Okay, what's that?
This is actually good because the words are that a person should experience the rejoicing in God like a groom rejoices over his bride.
Amazing. That's not, I was looking for something else, but I obviously made a wrong notation, so we're going to move on. But thank you for that. See, this is going to keep going. I've got two more now, and this one is modern, and you hear it all the time, but I love, here we're about to go into I'll actually lead up. We've got how much? No, we don't need all of that. The band leader, musician. Wow, he was wonderful. I don't remember his name. He was wonderful. Telling everyone to sing.
אני רוצה להגיד לך משהו קטן. יש לנו הרבה זמן, שתדעו, יש לנו את האולם פחות עד 3:30.
אוקיי.
לא מספיק.
גם ככה יש עוצר, אנחנו בשומרון, ואחרי השעה 10:30, סגור עד 4.
And he's just saying a bunch of nonsense about the place being open until 4 o'clock. But this is actually really fun. The band leader is giving a blessing to them, but leading into a song that's much more modern.
Oh, no, you wanna... שתהיו כל החיים באהבה ושתהיה לכם אינשאלה 100% של זוגיות ולשנה הבאה בעזרת השם בנים ובנות.
Okay, I'm just laughing. I saw the camera panned away from my daughter and son-in-law exactly at the moment that he's giving a blessing that they should next year have boys and girls, and my daughter waves dismisses with her hand like that. But this song, and it gets, I love for you to narrate, to talk. This is the one, I think, that's not specifically coming from a biblical context.
No. This is coming based on the teachings of a modern-day Hasidic rabbi named Rabbi Shalom Arush from the Breslov tradition, where based on his words that what God wants to give you is goodness, more goodness, and more goodness, and more goodness. And the more that you say that, the more that it manifests. And this song has taken over the whole country.
Yeah. Which, by the way, that's also in the last 20 months. And in a 100%. Sense, it really, it's not, go ahead.
Yeah.
It's not our liturgy.
No.
But it's our worship nonetheless, that everything right. should be, odio ter tov, odio ter tov, better and better and better. And that's the blessings for the
Correct.
Bride and the groom. Let's listen to another couple of seconds and the last one, actually appropriate that I picked this as the last.
גם ברית וגם בריתה בכל מילה אחת יאללה תרים לי אותה ושיהיה לי עוד יותר טוב ועוד יותר טוב ועוד יותר טוב ועוד יותר טוב עוד יותר טוב ועוד יותר טוב אבי תגיד לי שיהיה לכם כל החיים טוב.
I don't know, nothing like a Jewish wedding. Absolutely nothing. One more, Rav Shlomo.
Yeah.
And this is appropriate because it's connected to you also and something in your lineage, which also for some Christians who know the origin of it, it blew them away that we sing it at a wedding. You don't want to stop. It's so fun.
That is very much connected to my lineage. I come from the lineage of priests, and this song speaks about the joy that emanated within the people when they saw the priest emerging out of the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement, on Yom Kippur, where he brought about forgiveness and atonement for the whole nation. Why are we singing it at a wedding?
Ah, that's what I was going to ask you. Yeah.
Because a chatan and a kala, a bride and groom, going into their canopy is like the high priest going into the Holy of Holies. In a nutshell. So it's bringing joy and atonement and forgiveness to everyone. To everyone.
Amazing. And correct me if I'm wrong, the only other time that we sing it is actually on Yom Kippur.
It's the only time.
Right?
It's the only
time. We're taking from the Day of Atonement, and that's kind of the pinnacle, right? And maybe sure. Just a word on that. It's the pinnacle of our worship, 26 hours of fasting, and we're beseeching God to seal us in the Book of Life and Odio Ter Tov. Everything should be better. And
correct.
And now we bring it to a wedding.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem, it seems like it's a tremendous dichotomy. And one of my Christian friends who knew and was at the wedding was blown away that we're singing it.
It just shows you how much we take the privilege of this moment, of the wedding, and elevate it and just elevate the whole experience to the highest heights. We take it for real. Our joy is real. Our seriousness and worship is real.
Amazing. Rav Shlomo, wow. You know, I knew that we needed to have this conversation. I couldn't think of anyone else to help narrate it, but I didn't expect that you were going to take it to all of these heights. So thank you for that. Before we wrap up, is there anything else that we missed that you want to add?
I think we covered everything. I just want to say that to all of our Christian brothers and sisters out there, that there was never a time like right now where we have to become best of friends even more than ever, and our hearts are wide open.
That's well, it. On behalf of Rav Shlomo, I extend an invitation to come to his community. When here in Israel, and we'll actually, what I love to do, and my friends know this, when they're here to have Christian friends join us for Shabbat dinner, and that's the best time at Shirat Zagdi, although there's not a bad time. Rav Shlomo, thank you. What a delight. What an absolute delight for helping give me extra joy in celebrating my own daughter's wedding, but also adding all that dimension and commentary for people.
Good honor, my dear friend. Thank you for
having me. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. As we always wrap up our conversations, the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation wants you to know how appreciated you are. And we offer you a special gift. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf. And all we ask you to do is like, follow, or comment on the link to this, wherever you're finding it. And we pick one person at random to receive a book. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf because for the first 3.5 years, or almost 4 years of Inspiration from Zion, we were offering books by other authors. But now, almost for 2 years now, we've been offering a free copy of our book that we published in 2023, just before the war, Israel the Miracle. It's a stunning, stunning coffee table book with 75 essays by Christian leaders from all over the world. I was just with one of them last night. Another one passed away just a few weeks ago. But the words are powerful and timeless. So we want you to get your copy. We're also always grateful that our podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. If you're ever in the area, please do stop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And special thanks to the Coyne family as well for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and building bridges. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of loved one or special occasion or your favorite rabbi or bride and groom, please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd always love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue and invite you especially to send questions as well about traditional Judaism, as we just discussed for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who will also find it of interest and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful topics about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you.
Hallelujah.